Now, we're in the book of Job. We're going to cover some ground tonight in the book of Job. We took a break from Job last week. Not from Job. Job's great. It's his counselors that I have to take a break from. And we left off somewhere in the middle of chapter 13. One of the more interesting things for me in going through the book of Job is finding a decent place to stop, because I hate to stop on a bummer, but so much of this is a bummer. Josh Matthews was telling me the other day, he happened to be in the car coming home from work when the radio show was on, and so he was listening to it. He caught the end of the show, and it was from, was it Matthew chapter 16, talking about the last days and the destruction of the temple and all of that, and it happened to be that the shows that are on the radio are like 20, 22 minutes or something, and so the guy who edits them has to take and cut it down and try to turn one Sunday morning or Sunday night or whatever we give him for stuff into several radio shows, and so there's cutting and splicing, and he backs up a little bit to try to find a good place. Well, it was the end of the teaching, and I happened to be going through the place where I just finished talking about what an electromagnetic pulse would do as far as, you know, probably killing half to two-thirds of the population of the United States when all of the power failed and everything. And so basically I said something along the lines of, yeah, and probably two-thirds of the country would die. And then, pew, 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 the music starts going, and my cousin comes on and says, "We hope you've enjoyed today's broadcast." I was like, no, I actually haven't. I feel like I want to go home and weep now. But, well, sometimes going through Job is the same way, because finding a good place to stop. But we'll do our best. We're picking up in Job chapter 13, verse 15. He had just said, in part of his response to the guy Zophar, one of his three friends, remember, Job, held up by God as an example of a righteous man who had all of his stuff lost, all of his flocks, all of his belongings, everything taken away, his 10 children killed all at one time, and then struck with boils from the head of his, from top of his head to the bottom of his feet, so much so that he was covered in worms and pussy and scraping himself with a potsherd, sitting in the ashes. His wife said, "Why don't you curse God and die?" He was miserable. His three friends showed up and sat with him for a week and then started talking, and have not been good to him. And in the midst of all of that, he says, "Though he slay me, yet will I trust in him. But I will maintain my own ways before him. He also shall be my salvation, for a hypocrite shall not come before him." Because his friends have been calling him a hypocrite. That you've been sinning, that's why you're going through this. You were living a lie, there was sin in your life, because we know that bad things only happen to sinners and good things only happen to righteous people. And since you're going through this, obviously we can work that math backwards and find out that you're a sinner. And Job says, "Well, I don't care what you say. And I don't care what, I know the Lord is doing this to me. I don't know why, but I'm going to trust him. Even if this kills me, I'm going to trust him, and I'll stand before him, and he knows the truth. And a hypocrite, it's not going to come before him." He says, "Hear diligently my speech and my declaration with your ears. Behold now, I have ordered my cause, and I know that I shall be justified. Who is he that will plead with me? For now, if I hold my tongue, I shall give up the ghost." If I start, I can't keep this in. I've got to say it or I'll die. "Only," and now he kind of turns and starts talking to the Lord. He says, "Only do not two things unto me. Then will I not hide myself from thee. Withdraw thy hand far from me, and let not thy dread make me afraid. Then call thou, and I will answer, or let me speak, and answer thou me." He says, "You know, God, I only ask two things of you. If you just let up a little bit, if you could just let up a little bit, and then I know you're awesome, but could you just don't freak me out?" I mean, that's really kind of what he's saying. If you would just don't run me off, and then if you want me to speak, I'll speak. If you want to speak, I'll listen. Whatever you want, God, but just lay back your hand. He says, "How many are mine iniquities and sins? Make me to know my transgressions and my sin." He's not saying, "You know I'm righteous, God. You know it. Where's my sin? There's no sin." He's not saying that. I really think Job is a guy we read earlier in the book that was, not only was he upright in all his ways, but he was sacrificing daily for his 10 children just in case maybe they had sinned, and he was praying for them. And Job's a guy who's like, if I've done something wrong, if I've offended you, God, show me and I will change it. If I'm missing something here, and I think that's the cry of his heart. If there is sin in my life, if this is a result of something I've done, please show me so I can repent. Wherefore hidest thou thy face and holdest me for thine enemy? Now, God doesn't hold him as an enemy, but he doesn't know that. We read Job 1 and 2. We heard the behind the scenes. He hasn't seen any of that, which is like our lives, because we don't get the behind the scenes in our life. We only get what we experience. But he says, why am I your enemy? Wilt thou break a leaf driven to and fro? Wilt thou pursue the dry stubble? Look, I got no substance left. I'm weak. I'm burnt up. You don't need to keep going at me. For thou writest bitter things against me and makest me to possess the iniquities of my youth. I mean, I think Job is at the place where he's wondering, is this punishment for something I did when I was younger? I don't get it. Thou puttest my feet also in the stocks and lookest narrowly unto all my paths. Thou settest a print upon the heels of my feet. You know, you're watching my every step. And he's talking about himself here in the third person, as a rotten thing consumeth, as a garment that is moth-eaten. I mean, he's in a wormy, nasty, being consumed kind of place. And then he says, man that is born of a woman is of few days and full of trouble. He cometh forth like a flower, and he's cut down. He flees also as a shadow, and he continues not. This is Job's way of saying, you know, life's up, and then you die. I mean, that's really what he's just said. You're here, you live for a little while, it's miserable, and then you die. You ever been in that place where you felt that way? When you're going through pain, when you're going through suffering, it's like, I'm only here for a little while, and this is the way I've got to spend it. And dost thou open thine eyes upon such a one and bringest me into judgment with thee? Is it really, you know, somebody who is only here for a minute and it's miserable while he's here, is it worth watching me that closely so that you can bring me into judgment? Who can bring a clean thing out of an unclean? Not one. You know, Lord, we all start sinful. We're born sinful. If we're born that way, if you're expecting me to be perfect, if that's what it is, how can that be? Seeing his days are determined, the number of his months are with thee. Thou hast appointed his bounds that he cannot pass. That's an interesting thing to think about from time to time. We all have a set limit of time. We don't know what it is, but you and I have an appointed number of days. It would be, I don't know, sometimes I wish I knew how many days I had. But then I'd be freaked out about it. You know, I'd sit down and I'd count and I'd be worried about it. I'd also be tempted to put stuff off, thinking I had a lot of time. But, you know, especially if you're a child of God, you understand that the footsteps of a righteous man or woman, they're ordered by God. He knows every step you're going to take. He knows everything that you're going to see today, tomorrow, a week, a month, a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. He knows that whole picture. And that, I think, really there is comfort in that. That it's not all on me. And, you know, there's also some relief in that. Sometimes you can go through things in life. You know, if you're got a friend or a loved one who has died, passed on, and part of you will think, well, what if I had done this? You know, what if I hadn't done that? What if I could have? Maybe I should have done this. Maybe I could have done that. There's comfort in knowing that he has appointed bounds, and that he is not at our whim. I mean, I know sometimes reconciling the idea of man having free will and being able to choose and then the idea that God is sovereign is hard. It should be, because if you don't think it's hard to reconcile that, you obviously don't understand it. God is very big. There's a passage in, is it in Samuel? I forget exactly where it is, where David is fleeing from Saul. And he goes down to a city named Keilah. And Saul's looking for him. And David asks the Lord, if I stay here in the city. Or actually, no, it's before he goes down to the city. He says, I'm thinking about going down and holding up in that city. If I go down into that city, if I go, will Saul come down and get me and surround the city? And God says, yes, he will. And then he says, well, if he does that, will the people of the city turn me over to him? And God says, yes, that's what will happen. So David doesn't go down to the city. And so none of that happens. And you think about that for a minute. Now, here you've got Saul, and you've got an army around him. He doesn't know where David is. And think about the things that could potentially happen to either allow or prevent Saul from finding out where David is, from going down and surrounding the city. I mean, his horse could step in a hole, he could be thrown off, he could get sick and catch the plague and have to go home. There could be a meteor fall from heaven. All of this stuff could possibly happen, all the choices that could happen. He could change his mind here, change his mind there. And yet God can say, no, if you do this, this is going to happen, that's going to happen, that's going to happen, that's going to happen. Well, I better not do that. Okay, well, those things won't happen. God is so big that not only does he know the end from the beginning, he knows all the potential ends from. I mean, think about how many choices you make in a day. Do I run out to the store? Do I not run out to the store? Do I do this? Do I not do that? And sometimes it seems like those very inconsequential decisions end up having huge repercussions. You know, I was just running out to the store, and then I go through a light and somebody smashes me from the side. And well, if I hadn't gone, and yet God is big enough to know all of the choices you're going to make and can still say, I know the plans for you, the plans for good and not for evil, to an expected end. He's really, really big that way. To me, I think there's rest in there to know that he has appointed the bounds and that we cannot pass, that he knows even when we don't. Turn from him, he says in verse 6, that he may rest till he shall accomplish as a hireling his day. You know, he's only here for a little while, God. It's like a worker. Could you just lay off for a little bit? That's what Job's saying. He says, for there is hope of a tree if it be cut down, that it will sprout again, and that the tender branch thereof will not cease. Though the root thereof wax old in the earth, and the stalk thereof die in the ground, yet through the scent of water it will bud and bring forth boughs like a plant. Because Job's making the observation that even a tree, you know, you can cut off a tree. You guys have seen that in the woods. They cut a tree that withers a cut, and yet out of the roots or out of the stump, a little bit will grow up, and then you'll have a new plant come. And even though it seems like its life is over, it has another chance here in this life. But he's going to say for humans, there is no second chance at this life. This is all there is. And, of course, Hebrews tells us that it's appointed unto man once to die, and then the judgment. There is no karma. You're not going to come back as a butterfly or a happy thought or, you know, a toad or what, something better, something worse. It is one life, and then you stand before the Lord, and then there's eternity. And depending on what you did during this life, whether you've received forgiveness or not, determines the next. Job says, you know, the tree gets another shot, but man dies, and he wastes away. Yea, man gives up the ghost. And where is he? And again, remember, Job has a limited understanding of the afterlife. As the waters fail from the sea and the flood decays and dries up, so man lies down and rises not till the heavens be no more. They shall not awake nor be raised out of their sleep. You know, they dry up like a puddle. Oh, that thou wouldst hide me in the grave, that thou would keep me secret until thy wrath be past, that thou would appointest me a set time and remember me. Oh, that you'd hide, almost like I want to be removed from your wrath. Now, this could be talking about the trials in his life right now. Like, he's already asked God, would you just kill me? Just take me out of here. And maybe it's, I just want to die and escape all of this misery. Or in some ways, he might be talking about the future too, that, you know, there is a time when people will be hidden from wrath. I believe the church is going to be taken out of here before the tribulation that comes out on the earth. Isaiah 26, we covered a while ago on Thursday nights. Isaiah says something interesting in verse 19. He says, thy dead men shall live, together with my dead body shall they arise. Awake and sing, ye that dwell in dust, for the dew is as the dew of the herbs, the earth shall cast out the dead. Come, my people, enter thou into thy chambers and shut the doors about thee. Hide thyself, as it were, for a little moment until the indignation be overpassed. For behold, the Lord comes out of his place to punish the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity. The earth also shall disclose her blood, shall no more cover the slain. That Isaiah kind of saw a time when the righteous would be hidden from tribulation that would come. And you wonder, is Job talking about that, or is he just looking to escape what he's going through now? He says, if a man die, shall he live again? All the days of my appointed time, or my warfare, my labor, your translation might say, will I wait till my change or my revival shall come, my renewal. If a man die, shall he live again? Well, we know the answer to that. Yes, he shall live again. Not here on this earth. Well, new heavens, new earth. And I think that separates us from those who don't know the Lord. You know, we obviously, being the benefits of more knowledge, more understanding, more scripture revealed, have a better, clearer picture of what the afterlife is like. It's still not as clear as I would like. I wish I knew more about heaven. But the parts that we do see about him wiping away every tear, about, you know, I mean, you look at this awesome city, gates of pearl and precious stones, streets of gold, all of those things, it sounds fantastic. We have that hope. The rest of the world doesn't. They don't know. They wonder. That's why Paul said, I don't want you to sorrow as those that have no hope, because there is a life beyond this. Job says in verse 15, thou shalt call, and I will answer thee. Thou will have a desire to work to the work of thine hands. You'll want me again, almost, is what he's saying. For now thou numberest my steps. Dost thou not watch over my sin? My transgression is sealed up in a bag. Thou sewest up my iniquity. You know, now you see everything that I'm going through, all my shortcomings, but then they'll be sealed up. They'll be covered. And surely the mountain falling comes to naught. The rocks removed out of his place. The waters wear the stones. Thou washest away the things which grow out of the dust of the earth. And thou destroys the hope of man. He's kind of getting dark here, okay? And understand, he's lost 10 kids. He's covered with boils. He's got three of his supposed friends ripping at him all the time. He says, thou prevailest ever against him, and he passes. Thou changes his countenance and sendest him away. His sons come to honor, and he knows it not. And they are brought low, but he perceives not of them. But his flesh upon him shall have pain, and his soul within him shall mourn. We should sing some songs like that during worship. So Eliphaz at this point says, my brother is suffering. I need to comfort him. He says, then answered Eliphaz the Temanite and said, should a wise man utter vain knowledge and fill his belly with the east wind? Should he reason with unprofitable talk or with speeches wherewith he can do no good? He just said, Job, you're a windbag. You're blowing hot air. That's what he said. He and Job go back and forth accusing each other of being windbags. He says, yea, thou castest off fear, the ideas of God, and restrains prayer before God. He says, you're claiming to be innocent, Job, and you have no fear of God. That's why this is happening. For thy mouth utters thy iniquity, and thou choosest the tongue of the crafty. Thine own mouth condemns thee, and not I. Yea, thine own lips testify against thee. And he's saying, Job, the fact that you're talking like this proves that you're guilty. That's why you're going through this. Art thou the first man that was born? Or wast thou made before the hills? Hast thou heard the secret of God, and dost thou restrain wisdom to thyself? Do you think you have, you know, some sacred understanding and knowledge that nobody else has? What knowest thou that we know not? What understandest thou which is not in us? With us are both the gray head and very aged men, much elder than thy father. Now, is he saying we're older than you, or is he saying we're standing with the generations that have come before us, and they're all in agreement with our theology and our belief that the righteous are blessed and the wicked are punished? And that's interesting when you think about the gray-headed and very aged, because remember, this is probably one of the oldest books, and that puts Job somewhere around the time of Abraham or earlier. If you do the genealogies, if you look through the ages in the Bible, after the flood, you had Noah and his three sons were the only guys alive with their wives, right? Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Shem lived to be quite old, and Noah quite possibly was alive still for the first part of Abraham's life. Shem lived almost the whole length of Abraham's life. So you would have people in Job's day, perhaps, that could firsthand remember the flood. That's how kind of old you're talking about. And he said, they all agree with us. Now, they are right in that God does reward the righteous and he punishes the wicked. But what they're wrong about is the immediately and all the time right now in this world, like immediately it happened. Because let's be honest, if that was the case, if wickedness was always punished immediately and righteousness was always rewarded, everyone would be righteous, right? If, as a kid growing up, you had a dad that always spanked first and asked questions later, that always immediately, you do what's right, he gives you the cookie, you do what's wrong, he gets the belt, every time, you learn to avoid the belt. You learn to go for the cookie. That's and if God was like that he immediately punished and immediately, yeah, could he, is he God? Can he break anybody? Sure. But he isn't that way. He's long-suffering, and he gives you time to choose. his friend continues, "Friend, are the consolations of God small with thee? Is there any secret thing with thee? Why does thine heart carry thee away? What do thy eyes wink at, that thou turnest thy spirit against God and lettest such words go out of your mouth? What is wrong with you? Why are you in rebellion? Why are you, you got some secret there we don't know about? What is man that he should be clean? And he which is born of a woman that he should be righteous? What are you saying, Job? Behold, he puts no trust in his saints. Yea, the heavens are not clean in his sight." Even the saints, the holy ones, the angels, the heavens. He says, those things are not perfect. How much more abominable and filthy is man which drink iniquity like water? I will show thee, hear me, and that which I have seen I will declare. Which wise men have told their fathers and have not hid it? Unto whom alone the earth was given, and no stranger passed among them? The wicked man travails with pain all his days, and the number of years is hidden to the oppressor. A dreadful sound is in his ears. In prosperity the destroyer shall come upon him, like he did for you, Job. The wicked man travails in pain all his days. No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. I wish he did. Psalm 73, the guy who wrote that said, no, he doesn't. In fact, that guy almost slipped because he couldn't understand the prosperity of the wicked. He that believes not that he shall return out of darkness, and he is waited for the sword. Judgment is just waiting for him. And you, Job. He wanders abroad for bread, saying, where is it? He knoweth that the day of darkness is ready at hand. Trouble and anguish shall make him afraid. They shall prevail against him as a king ready to the battle. For he stretched out his hand against God and strengthens himself against the Almighty. He's telling Job that he's fighting against God. All Job has done is what? Ask God, why is this happening? Right? Isn't that what he's done? Is that sinful to ask God why? Is it sinful to say, God, why is this happening? I don't understand. Why are you letting this happen? Well, if it is, you got a theological problem, because Jesus said, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? See, we read through this book of Job, and I know it's hard. It is hard to go through some of this advice that these guys are saying and wade through some of this. But if you listen closely and you pay attention, you will hear echoes of things that you and I say in the words of Job. What kind of gives me pause and makes me feel bad is I hear some echoes of things I've said in the past to other people in the voice of his friends. And that's scary. To think that I could look at someone's situation and look at where they are now and try to extrapolate it back and blame them for the position that they're in, when, truth be told, I have no idea. It may be because the Lord is doing the same thing in them that he was doing in Job. He says in verse 26, he runneth upon him, even on his neck. He's talking about the wicked guy now. And upon the thick bosses of his bucklers, because he covers his face with his fatness, and he maketh collops of fat on his flanks. That's some jowls and saddlebags is what that's talking about. He's because in that day, you know, a sign, when you got to work all day to make a day's worth of wages to be able to eat for a day, you don't have a tendency to get real fat. There were no Little Debbies in those days, no Twinkies, no Dairy Queen. Heath Blizzard is my personal favorite. Cookies from Walmart. I don't even want to go there. But these guys, you know, a sign of fatness was somebody who was wealthy. But here he's talking about the wicked, and he's like, he's preparing himself to run from God, and so he's fattening himself up to be able to outlast God. Like a camel, you know, you drink a whole lot and then you store it. Well, this is a guy who's getting his cheeks all fat and he's putting it on in the hips so that he can last for a while when the trouble comes. And he dwelleth in desolate cities and in houses which no man inhabits, which are ready to become heaps. He'll be outcast. And he shall not be rich, neither shall his substance continue, neither shall he prolong the perfection thereof upon the earth. He's going to lose everything. He shall not depart out of darkness. The flame shall dry up his branches. In the breath of his mouth shall he go away. He'll be consumed. Let not him that is deceived trust in vanity, for vanity shall be his recompense or his reward. Now, right in the middle of all of this stuff, this guy throws out a nugget of truth. Don't let the one who is deceived trust in emptiness, because his reward for doing that will be emptiness. The idea of sowing and reaping. You sow to the wind, you reap the whirlwind. That, you know, the measure that you give out, it'll be brought back, pressed down, shaken together. We know that's true. The problem is this truth is misapplied on Job because Job is getting what he got because the Lord allowed it to happen because he was righteous, not because it was wicked. He says, it shall be accomplished before his time, and his branch shall not be green. He shall shake off his unripe grape as a vine, and shall cast off the his flower as the olive. For the congregation of hypocrites, like you, Job, shall be desolate, and fire shall consume the tabernacles of bribery. You know, like they fell upon all your stuff, fire from heaven. They conceive mischief and bring forth vanity, and their belly prepares deceit. That's what you're doing, Job. And Job answered and said, I have heard many such things. Miserable comforters are you all. You guys are miserable. Shall vain words have an end, or what emboldeneth thee that thou answerest? What did I say to provoke this? Are you ever going to stop just blowing wind? He says, I also could speak as you do, if your soul were in my soul's stead. I could heap up words against you and shake my head at you. And you get the picture here that there's more going on even than just the words. The words are bad enough and tedious to go through. But you know how communication is? Communication is only about 10% verbal. It's about 30% attitude and then 50%+ action or nonverbal communication, right? Because I can, you know, my wife could say to me, where are you going? And the information could be, where are you going? Or my wife could say to me, where are you going? Well, that changes everything completely. And if she says, where are you going? Wham! At the same time, she slams something down on the counter. Well, then it's a whole nother level. You know, it's same. I mean, so much can be done with nonverbal communication. And here, we've got the picture that his friends are not only saying things to him, but they're giving the head wag like, oh, no, you didn't. Like, I don't think so. He's getting the full package from these guys, and he's reading it, and there's nothing but condemnation. He says, and I could do the same thing to you, you know. If you were in this position, I could trash you just like you're trashing me. He says, but I would strengthen you with my mouth, and the moving of my lips should assuage your grief. I have to ask myself, which kind of person am I when I see someone in that difficult spot? Am I someone who is looking to play the policeman or the paramedic? You know, life is messy. I don't know if you've noticed that. Life in the church is also messy. A lot of times you come into a situation and there's been a shipwreck or there's been a car crash. And there are some people who see a car crash and they're a cop. Their job is to come in, assign blame to the guilty party, and make sure that the right person is ticketed and, you know, come to account for what they've done. The paramedic is the guy who just is looking for someone who's bleeding and to stop the flow and to try to help them. And you know, the cop can sort out later on what happens. But the most important thing when someone is going through a trial is to stop the hemorrhaging. And Job says, you know, I could do the same thing to you, but if you were in my place, I'd be showing some grace and some mercy, because it comes back, pressed down, shaken together. The same measure that we judge with is what we're going to be judged by. He says, though I speak, my grief is not assuaged. Unfortunately, I can't comfort myself. And though I forbear, what am I eased? Even if I'm patient with you guys, I still don't get any break from it. But now he hath made me weary. Thou hast made desolate all my company. I'm tired, and you guys have made it worse. Thou hast filled me with wrinkles, which is a witness against me, and my leanness rising up in me bears witness to my face. You guys are making me old. He tears me in his wrath, who hates me. He gnashes upon me with his teeth. My enemy sharpens his eyes upon me. They have gaped upon me with their mouths. They have smitten me upon the cheek reproachfully. They have gathered themselves together against me. God has delivered me to the ungodly and turned me over into the hands of the wicked. Now, you can read that and think Job is saying, you know, God is out to get me. He's my enemy now. He's destroying me. I don't think he's there. I really think, if you listen to that passage, it sounds very familiar to me. I think Job, in the midst of his suffering, in realizing that he's suffering and it's not his fault for what he's going through, he sounds very much like another passage that's in Psalm 22, where it says, in verse 12. Many bulls have compassed me, strong bulls of Bashan have beset me round. They gaped upon me with their mouths as a ravening and roaring lion. I am poured out like water, and all my bones are out of joint. My heart is like wax, it's melted in the midst of my bowels. My strength is dried up like a potsherd, and my tongue cleaves to my jaws, and thou hast brought me into the dust of death. For dogs have compassed me, the assembly of the wicked has enclosed me. They pierced my hands and my feet. I may tell all my bones, they look and stare upon me. They part my garments among them and cast lots upon my vesture. But be not thou far from me, O Lord, O my strength. Haste thee to help me. David, in his suffering, in his running from Saul and his agony, I think he touched a little bit of Christ there. And he speaks, and all of a sudden, David, they didn't pierce David's hands and feet. David, I think, had a little bit of vision of Christ on the cross. And I think Job, in some of his suffering for something that he didn't do, touches a little bit of that here. And he sees what Christ saw, his enemies gathering around him, gaping upon him. You know, we sing those songs. We sang, what, A Cry in My Heart. Oh, Lord, I want to know you. Well, I want to know him too. Don't you want to know him? I mean, isn't that part of it? Don't you really want to know him and see him face to face? You know, I look at Paul's life. And Paul in Philippians talked about all of the things that he had in life and all of the things that he achieved. But then he said, everything that I had, I counted a loss for Christ. I gave it up. He says, yea, doubtless I count all things but loss for the excellency of the knowledge of Christ Jesus my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things and do count them but dung that I may win Christ and be found in him, not having my own righteousness which is of the law, but that which is through faith of Christ, the righteousness which is of God by faith, that I may know him and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his sufferings, being made conformable unto his death. Part of knowing him, I think, can only be learned through the fellowship of his sufferings. You can't say, I want to know God, I want to know who you are, I want to know what you're like, I want to know what you've done for me, and at the same time say, I never want to experience anything bad. I never want to question why I'm going through something difficult. I never want to have trial. I never want to have to look forward to being rescued, because there is some knowledge of God that only comes in a real dark place when you're alone and you cry out to him and there's no one else there. And I think Job touched a little bit of that. He says, I was at ease, but he's broken me asunder. He has taken me by the neck and shakes me to pieces and sets me up for his mark. Okay, you made me your target, God. You shook me like a dog, and then you set me up and you made me hold the apple. It's not even on my head. It's right here. I'm holding the target, you know. His archers compass me round about. He cleaves my reins asunder, splits my guts open. He doth not spare. He pours out my gall upon the ground. He breaks me with breach upon breach. He runs upon me like a giant. I have sewed sackcloth upon my skin and defiled my horn and my strength, my dignity in the dust. My face is foul with weeping, and on my eyelids is the shadow of death. Not for any injustice in my hands. Also, my prayer is pure. Again, sounds a lot like Isaiah 53 to me. He laid upon him the iniquity of us all. O earth, cover not thou my blood. Let my cry have no place. Don't let this be hidden. Also now, behold, my witnesses in heaven and my records on high. My friends scorn me, but my eye pours out my tears unto God. Oh, that one might plead for a man with God as a man pleads for his neighbor. When a few years are come, then I shall go the way whence I shall not return. He says, my breath is corrupt. You ever been in that place with corrupt breath? Some of you could. No. I mean, think about this. Job is smitten with boils, right? Head to his toe. Probably in his mouth. You ever try to eat when you got sores in your mouth? Can't eat much. So if you've ever fasted for any length of time, there's some really foul breath involved with that. When you're not eating, stuff's going on down there. I don't know. It smells bad. And Job seems to be in that place. No wonder his wife said, curse God and die. Your breath, honey, it's so bad. It says, my days are extinct. The graves are ready for me. got to do something here. I mean, come on. This is dark stuff. You got to lighten it up. Are there not mockers with me, and doth not mine eye continue in their provocation? These guys won't let up. Lay down now. Put me in a surety with thee. Who is he that will strike hands with me? Nobody will even agree with me and take my side. For thou hast hid their heart from understanding, therefore shalt thou not exalt them. He that speaks flattery to his friends, even the eyes of his children shall fail. He's made me also a byword of the people. In aforetime, I was as a tabaret. People celebrated me before. Tabaret, it's like a percussion instrument. You know, people loved to be around me. I was like joy to them. Now I'm a proverb, like, ooh, there go, you know, man, you're suffering like Job. And we say that. He literally became the guy that we hold up as an example of suffering. He says, mine eye also is dim by reason of sorrow. I've been crying my eyes out. Can't even see anymore. And all my members are as a shadow. I'm wasting away. Upright men shall be astonished at this, and the innocent shall stir up himself against the hypocrite. The righteous also shall hold his way, and he that has clean hands shall be stronger and stronger. But as for you all, do you return and come now, for I cannot find one wise man among you. Nobody else will have anything to do with me but you three, and that's not a good thing. My days are past, my purposes are broken off, even the thoughts of my heart. They change the night into day. In other words, I can't sleep, I'm up all night. The light is short because of darkness. Then, you know, days and nights are just whizzing by. If I wait, the grave is my house. That's my next stop. I have made my bed in the darkness. I have said to corruption, thou art my father. To the worm, thou art my mother and my sister. Literally, that worm, it's maggot. I am the son of a maggot. That's pretty low, really. And where is now my hope? As for my hope, who shall see it? They shall go down to the bars of the pit or Sheol when our rest together is in the dust. Bildad can't take it anymore. And he said, he then answered Bildad, the Shuhite, the short guy. And he said, how long will it be ere you make an end of words? Mark, and afterwards we will speak. Job, could you do us a favor? Could you tell us when you're going to shut up? So then we can say, because this is just too much to take, Job. Wherefore are we counted as beasts and reputed vile in your sight? He tears himself in his anger. Shall the earth be forsaken for thee, and shall the rock be removed out of his place? Look, Job, there's a natural order to things. And is all of creation and everything going to change to fit the way you think they should be? Yeah, the light of the wicked shall be put out, and the spark of his fire shall not shine, because that's you, you're wicked. The light shall be dark in his tabernacle, and his candle shall be put out with him. You're going to get what's coming. The steps of his strength shall be straightened, and his own counsel shall cast him down. It's your fault this is happening, for he is cast into a net by his own feet. He walks upon a snare. The jinn shall take him by the heel, and the robber shall prevail against him. The snare is laid for him in the ground, and a trap for him in the way. See, you're caught by your own sins, Job. Terror shall make him afraid on every side, and shall drive him to his feet, and make you paranoid. You know, the wicked flee when no man chases. That's you, Job. His strength shall be hunger-bitten, and destruction shall be ready at his side. It shall devour the strength of his skin, like those boils full of worms you got, Job. Even the firstborn of death shall devour his strength. His confidence shall be rooted out of his tabernacle, and it shall bring him to the king of terrors. The mother of all fears is going to get you. It shall dwell in his tabernacle, because it's none of his. Brimstone shall be scattered upon his habitation. Fire, you know, like the fire that fell on you. His roots shall be dried up beneath him, and above his branch shall be cut off. His remembrance shall perish from the earth, and he shall have no name in the street. You know, all his kids will die, Job. He shall be driven from light into darkness and chased out of the world. He shall neither have son nor nephew among his people, nor any remaining in his dwellings. Can you imagine? Is this the guy you want going to hospital visitation? I mean, this guy's brutal. They that come after him shall be astonished at his day, as they that went before him were frightened. Surely such are the dwellings of the wicked, and this is the place of him that knows not God. You don't know anything, Job. Well, have a good night, you guys. No, I can't. I'm sorry. I got to read a few more verses because I can't. I mean, see what I mean? Where do you stop in the middle of this? Where do you just say, yeah, that's a great place. Now, grace and peace. Be lifted up. God make his face shine upon you. Job answered and he said, how long will you vex my soul and break me in pieces with words? You know, the tongue can break a bone. If nothing else, out of all of this stuff, and maybe you're not in a place where you're going through suffering like Job is, but I pray that none of you are. If nothing else, we should come away from this book knowing, one, that we should be graceful when we're dealing with people who are suffering in trial. I don't want to be one of those three guys. Remember, God shows up at the end and he says, if Job doesn't pray for you, I'm going to kill you, guys. That's what God says. You guys blew it. You misrepresented me. And that's what they're doing all along this. They're saying, God's mad at you. God hates you. That's why you're getting this, because you've been a sinner. He says, these 10 times he's counting now. He's like, how many times are they going to say this? 10 times now you've reproached me. You're not ashamed that you make yourself strange to me. And be it indeed that I've erred, mine error remains with myself. If indeed you will magnify yourselves against me and plead against me my reproach, know now that God's overthrown me and has compassed me with his net. This isn't my net. I haven't stepped in my own trap. God has done this. He's allowed it to happen. Behold, I cry out of wrong, but I'm not heard. I cry aloud and there is no judgment. There's no justice. This is not me getting what I deserve. He's fenced up my way that I cannot pass, and he has set darkness in my path. He has stripped me of my glory. He's taken the crown from my head. He's destroyed me on every side, and I am gone. And my hope he's removed like a tree. He hath also kindled his wrath against me, and he's counted me as one of his enemies. Now, that's not true. In fact, God has counted him as the greatest example of a righteous man on the earth. But where Job's sitting, it doesn't seem that way. His troops come together and raise their way against me and encamp round about my tabernacle. He's got an army against me, and I'm not even a strong city. I'm a tent. He's laying siege to a tent. He has put my brethren far from me. Mine acquaintance are verily estranged from me. You know, the only thing worse than going through a trial is feeling misunderstood in the middle of it. My kinsfolk have failed. My familiar friends have forgotten me. They that dwell in my house and my maids count me for a stranger. Even my servants won't even talk to me. I am an alien in their sight. I called my servant and he gave me no answer. I entreated him with my mouth. My breath is strange to my wife. Though I entreated for the children's sake of my own body. You know, honey, remember, we had kids together. Don't treat me like this. I'm the father of your children. Yea, young children despise me. Ew, mommy, look at the wormy man. I mean, you know how kids are. They say what they see. No, don't say that. I arose, they spake against me. All my inward friends abhorred me. They whom I loved are turned against me. My bone cleaves to my skin and to my flesh, and I am escaped with the skin of my teeth. That's where it came from. Have pity upon me. Have pity upon me, O you my friends, for the hand of God has touched me. Why do you persecute me as God and are not satisfied with my flesh? Oh, that my words were now written. Oh, that they were printed in a book. Well, you know, funny thing. They are printed in a book. They were graven with an iron pen and lead in the rock forever. For I know that my Redeemer lives, and that he shall stand at the latter day upon the earth. And though after my skin worms destroy this body, and he's saying this as he's watching the worms in his body, yet in my flesh shall I see God, whom I shall see for myself, and mine eyes shall behold, and not another, though my reins be consumed within me. But you should say, why persecute we him, seeing the root of the matter is found in me? Be afraid of the sword, for wrath brings the punishment of the sword, that you may know there is a judgment. You know, I got to say, for Job to go through all of this and to suffer all of these problems and then have these friends harangue him and criticize him, and being at the place where he thinks this is going to be the end of me, this disease, this trial is going to kill me, but I do know this one thing. My Redeemer is alive, and I'm going to see him again, and I'm going to die. I mean, this is amazing insight in an old Testament place to know that, yeah, I'm going to die and I'm going to rot, but But these eyes, they're coming back. God is going to give me a new body. And I'm going to see him in my flesh. Not somebody else, but me as I am. I'm going to come again, and I'm going to see him face to face. That's the hope we have. And we have more hope than Job did, because we have a clearer picture. That to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. And that this corruption must put on incorruption, and this mortality, immortality. And that, you know, with the trump of God, the dead in Christ shall rise first, and then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up to meet him in the air, that wherever he is, we will be also. That's the hope that we have. That's a hope that I can go home on and say, amen. Let's pray. Lord, thank you so much that you have given us a hope. Lord, thank you, Father, for a man like Job going through these things, so that when we go through trials, we can take comfort and know maybe it isn't because of what we've done, but because you're working something in us so that we can know you in a way we never did before. Lord, help us to learn from our trials early, and help us not to be like his friends. Lord, give us grace. Let our speech be graceful and merciful and kind. May we be like you. We ask it in Christ's name. Grace and peace, guys.